Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 52. Our guest is Jeremy Packer, the Chief Technology Officer for Ultimate Gaming Championship. In this podcast, I interview Jeremy about his youth as a professional Halo 2 competitor, the evolution of UGC Esports, and the establishment of UGC EDU. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how's it going, Trent? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to having you on the show. I want to get to know you better first before we jump into everything about the company and whatnot. So first off, Jeremy, how did you get into gaming and esports?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. I used to play Halo 2 competitively, of course, just like every, you know, teenage kid. What was interesting is that I used to host LAN parties, you know, just kind of bringing together the competition. And that was when I first ran into Matt Jackson, which is the CEO of UGC, or Ultimate Gaming Championship. You know, he had a LAN center about an hour away from my house. And it was really the only place that you could go and actually compete against people. So, you know, fast forward, I ended up winning a tournament with him and he paid for me to go to MLG Chicago, you know, Major League Gaming back in the day. And, you know, after that, it was just kind of one of those experiences where like that competitive nature, being able to sit down and look over and see, you know, Ogre 2 next to you, was kind of insane for me. And, you know, I kept playing Halo. I kept playing, you know, different games, and it was just one of those things that it was always in the back of my mind that I wanted to do it, but it really didn't take focus until, you know, a few years ago. I had just graduated college and I went out to California, Silicon Valley, with an app that I created called Rap Chat. And we raised some money. We went out there, you know, grew the app internationally. It's in 150 countries, used by a million people a month. And I get this call one day and it's Matt and he's telling me, hey, we just raised some money. I need your help in building this out. And, you know, at the time, UGC was kind of still a big brand. You know, they work with a lot of bigger names in terms of sponsors to, you know, promote different things. But, you know, they're really a tournament organizer at this point for game developers. So, you know, when I first got involved with UGC, they had just finished the Gears of War Pro Circuit in Las Vegas. You know, it was the same place that they filmed The Price is Right. You know, massive tournament. They gave away $250,000 for the Gears Pro Circuit. And it was at that point when they started to look towards the future. And this was, I think, in 2017. They wanted to bring in more people into the sport. And this was really before esports was esports. You know, they didn't really have the title for it just yet. So, you know, when I started getting involved with them, they wanted to build out a technology platform. And it was not something that was just going to be another Battlefy or another challenge, but it was going to be something that promoted ecosystems itself. You know, not just one-off tournaments, but building community, building, you know, that pipeline from amateur to pro. So that really stuck with me. You know, we started to build out an esports combine. And that was what really, you know, sparked my interest in all of it.
Very cool. And so you mentioned that that your CEO for UGC was able to afford you to go to MLG. What was that experience like?
Yeah, you know, it was, he is an educator himself. You know, he taught architecture. And you know, on his spare time, he would just, you know, host these LAN parties. And it was really cool because I didn't really have much money growing up. So whenever someone was like, hey, we'll pay for you to go compete, all you have to do is wear a logo. To me, that was really cool. You know, my parents didn't get it, of course. They were like, why does this guy want to take you and your friends to Chicago? And of course, they met him and, you know, it all made sense after that. But back then MLG wasn't as big as it had became, you know. Mm-hmm. it was still in their kind of heyday. You still had to bring your own, you know, controllers, your own TV at most times. So it was my first experience of having more than like 200 people in a room competing for sure.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't think I've talked to someone who was at the early days of what we consider to be the professional scene today that talks about that those events were still sort of BYOC or BYO, you know, just bring your own computer, bring your own console, bring your own controller. It was the peripheral companies hadn't gotten invested in esports yet. That's an interesting story. And so at that time you were competing in Halo?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I was too young for Halo 1. Okay, yeah. And Halo 2 was kind of that main point for us where, you know, it came out, everyone was really involved. You know, if you remember the hype of Halo 2 when it came out, mm-hmm. you know, everyone was playing it, everyone was really big. And I mean, that's when the MLG really took off too. You know, when you have mm-hmm. like T-Squared coming into the picture and, you know, Final Boss and all of them, it was just such a hype time, you know, thinking back to it. I definitely have some of my best memories with my friends playing Halo 2. So.
Yeah, Halo 2 is a little bit before my time, I think, because Halo for me was really beginning at Halo 3.
Yeah,
I think Halo 2, I think we might have had an Xbox at that time, but I don't remember playing it that much. Halo 3, of course, with online Xbox Live and everything hooked up, I remember playing that more regularly. What were we about to ask?
No, I was just going to ask if you had played, you know, much Halo yourself.
Yeah,
you
a lot that. More Halo 3 than Halo 2. I kind of remember playing Halo 2, but not as much as playing Halo 3. Halo 2, just the older Xbox with the big chunky controller and wired controllers and things like that. I think I spent more time on PlayStation at that time, to be honest. I had a PlayStation 2 and I would mostly play sports games, mostly like a Madden player, to be honest. And then kind of simultaneously at that time, I'm trying to think of what else I would be playing. I also had a GameCube, so I was also playing like Pikmin and games like that.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Halo 2 never really actually got me. But you know what's interesting? I was actually playing Splinter Cell, I think, at that time as well. Mm-hmm. And some of the Tom Clancy games. So I just think I was more gravitated and eventually got kind of hooked on the Call of Duty stuff versus the Halo stuff.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, UGC is one of those companies that we've really been embedded with Halo ever since the start, you know, really involved in their grassroots scene. We've done a lot of work with 343, you know, different events. I'm not sure if you heard about the Halo Classic. It was, you know, before COVID.
I did.
You know, so that was ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hosted two Halo Classics, one in St. Louis and then one in Atlantic City, you know, sponsored by 343, Microsoft, Xbox, you know, brought back all of that hype Halo 3, you know, with the pro teams coming back, you know, being able to fight again on a main stage. You know, it was really great for nostalgia.
Yeah, I was still sort of adjacent to Halo more recently because I flew to DreamHack Anaheim and they had the DreamHack, I think it was Halo Reach, if I'm right, or I'm forgetting, but they had the tournament there. So I was looking into Halo different tournaments and I saw Halo Classic. and some of the stuff that UGC had put on. And so what UGC offers now, what you're before, I think maybe this was off air, is that UGC is going in the direction more like an ESL, right? They're going in more the direction of facilitating tournaments for developers, right?
Yeah. So, you know, pre-COVID, we were a tournament organizer. You know, we hosted our own events. We were kind of available for hire. And we had this, you know, platform that we built for our own use that was just really battle tested to the point where once COVID hit, we didn't really have to transition much into it. We used to host a lot of different qualifiers online. And then we would have a big live event. So people were able to play, you know, their matches at home. If they qualified, then they would go to a live event where they could play, you know, on their main stage. And it was about a year and a half ago that we started shifting from the amateur and pro market into the scholastic space. And, you know, that's where we've really started to kind of find our groove. You know, right now, UGC has kind of transitioned from not just a tournament organizer, but we're esports infrastructure. You know, we handle everything from merchandise to player and team management to acquiring sponsorship for big events, you know, to even providing, you know, state-of-the-art broadcasting tools that allow people to create content on the side, being able to build storylines alongside of the broadcast, and a lot more. So, you know, the days of just having, you know, an online platform, it doesn't work anymore, you know, for the big reach that we need. You know, there's so many different parts of esports involved in it that we've really just started to, you know, build tools to empower our team. And because of that, we started to open up our toolbox to other people that are in the space. And, you know, it's been really good so far.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. I think this space of scholastics, both being high school or middle school, high school, and collegiate, are growing really fast. And you kind of mentioned it earlier, like a path to professional. And so I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about this. I've been interviewing people and paying attention to some changes going on in the industry where the capital that's coming into the industry, whereas, you know, in previous years it was really highly focused on the professional side with sponsors and advertisers, it's sort of moving to this more balanced version of the term esports, where we have recreational esports, casual esports, scholastic esports, and having the parks and recreations get involved, and also with like education departments getting involved in esports. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So what are some of the services you're providing to the scholastic esports industry?
Yeah. So, you know, of course there are quite a few names out there, you know, that are currently going after those markets. What I think is different from our approach is, you know, we're so focused on the amateur and pro market that we believe that the scholastic space is the stepping stone into that. And so right now we've been working with a lot of colleges to open up kind of recruiting options, you know, to kind of give these high schoolers a place to compete, to be able to, you know, find their groove, and also be able to get discovered. Recently been having these Battle Academy activations, which, you know, graciously sponsored by, you know, Respawn Gaming Chairs, LG Electronics, SHI International, Learn to Esport. You know, of course, I don't have the full list now, as I just spaced it, but, you know, some big names there. And, you know, we've given away esport labs, you know, to high schools and colleges that wouldn't have had it before, you know, and working with partners like this that, you know, instead of just kind of giving away, you know, a little bit of money for prizes here and there, you know, we're focused on building those programs up for years to come. And instead of giving these students, you know, just sponsorship and scholarship money, you know, we're helping these high schools build programs that are going to last, equipment that can be used by many students, you know, to build and cater to those programs. So working with, you know, great companies like LG Electronics, who have, you know, Ultra Gear monitors, which if you've never used one, it's honestly the best monitor I've ever used in my life. And not because they're one of our sponsors, but, you know, 175 hertz refresh rate is pretty insane. So I think with that, you know, we've really been, you know, bringing in high school students, allowing them to compete against each other. And instead of doing it on that statewide level and, you know, across the country, we're focused on building regional battles, you know, like in traditional sport models. You know, you're used to kind of like with, you know, using football as an example, you know, your local high school, they have a rival, you know, they know that they want to compete against someone like that. And some of the things that we heard while doing our research into this is that, you know, teams don't want to play, like a team from Nebraska doesn't want to play a team from Florida. Like they don't know each other. There's nothing that really matters to that. But a team from Nebraska is going to want to play another team from Nebraska for bragging rights. You know, we're the best in this region. We're the best here. And as we start to build out those conferences at that level, you know, we really start to see growth because educators also feel the same way. One thing to mention with our infrastructure is that, you know, these statewide esport organizations, for instance, we have no interest in telling them how to run their programs. We understand esports infrastructure and we've built a fantastic platform to empower them to do everything that they need to. But at the end of the day, they're the ones that get to make those decisions on how they want to play, who they want to have involved, and so much more. And so when you have the decision makers on the ground floor, you know, working with those educators, it's a different aspect than just having one person at the top collecting money and telling people what to do.
The challenge I think that Scholastic Esports has, and that a lot of people that I've talked to recently about this, is that these school districts and these universities, community colleges, don't have the staff to support an esports program. And it's companies like yours that can consult them to make them better at serving this new form of education to the youth who are regularly engaging in the digital world on their smart devices, from their phones, their tablets, to their laptops, and then to the you know, studios situation if they go towards the streamer direction with the PC, and then in the bigger world, the VR aspect. The challenge that I'm hearing is that the educators just don't have the experience. They just don't have the passion for gaming that a professional player has, and that there's a lack of talent out there to provide for the school districts and the universities out there. Like, how are you guys advising high schools, universities to get the right staff for their programs? Because we've seen a few different stories where they'll put an art teacher in control of the after school program, or you know, they might have an IT teacher or something like that that takes it, but they're more, you know, they're what they care about more is robotics and programming, not as much as the gaming aspect. So is there a program that you are helping kind of find the right maybe teachers to run these programs based on like their aptitude toward and their desire to play games, or how do you kind of advise these school boards?
Yeah, you know, that's a I will say, from, you know, the UGC standpoint, we don't necessarily work at the level you know, directly at that. Mm-hmm. Like, to your point, I have met so many art teachers running esport programs as a coach, you know, in their spare time. It's mostly the IT teachers, you know, the people who are interested in STEM. And I'm not sure if the school district is like, hey, it has an Ethernet, so you must know how this runs. I'm not sure, you know, what that is or not, but I will say that today, the biggest part about having a good coach in high school is it's not just about esports. And that's the biggest thing for me that I've realized is, you know, as we focus on the amateur and pro markets, everyone is just really sweaty. You know, they want to win, they want to be professional, they want to have a million Twitch followers. And on the high school level, you know, these coaches are looking to make sure that their students are having fun, making sure that they have consistency and that they're trying to bring legitimacy into esports. And so the coaches that we have had the blessings with, you know, we've had really good experiences with them. You know, we make it so that our platform has everything that they need to go into game day and be fine. There's a lot of problems with Scholastic Esports that people have never considered, you know, without giving away all of the like ins and outs of this. You know, there's a lot of school districts that don't allow Discord. There's a lot of tournament platforms that are actually banned because of the word gaming. In some states, video gaming is still actually considered gambling, you know? So when you mentioned Tilapia, or Tilapia, I think is the proper name, you know.
Tapalti,
that's right. You know, there's a lot of different problems that face Scholastic Esports. And, you know, when you have a coach that can barely take a screenshot, or, you know, they don't know what a Discord is, you can imagine that having them, you know, lead people to victory in a video game is a little bit more challenging for them. But I will say that most of them show up every day after they're already 8 hours of work, and they put in that extra time to make sure their kids have a great time. And I mean, it's just admirable. Like, a lot of these coaches aren't being paid extra. They're not really getting any benefit out of it, except, you know, they're helping students. And, you know, there's a thing called castle.org. You know, I've been kind of reading this into a lot, but it's social and emotional learning. You know, being able to give students that understanding that it's consistency, it's sportsmanship. And those are life lessons that are being taught with esports at that level that are going to carry on, you know, the rest of your life. Like, as a student athlete myself, you know, like, I had a track coach tell me one time, you know, compete as hard as you can today, because there's going to be a time in your life that you can't compete. And that always stuck with me. And I think that these coaches are in the same spot where, you know, even though they know what they're doing most of the time, they try really hard. And, you know, we also have students who kickstart their own programs. So we work with, like, we allow teams that don't have an official club advisor. You know, we want to make esports accessible to everyone. And, you know, because of that, like, you know, I mentioned this because we had a team once who was on our, like, they were doing very well in our Battle Academy. And we ended up having, I think, 20,000 views on, like, the championship, you know, and one of the views was, like, a principal of their school. And it was, she, like, had commented on the thing. She was like, I had no idea that they were this good. And it's those types of things that people don't realize that this is a path to college. Like, this is a path of continued education. So it's been beautiful, especially during COVID, to see how these attitudes and perceptions have changed around it, where they're like, we can play sports at home now. Like, we can do this. So it's been great.
Yeah. I'm kind of laughing at myself right now. Breaking the fourth wall a little bit here. Because we've had a few funny moments on this podcast. to be honest, I was a bit confused. My mind, for some reason, did this mental gymnastics and is doing this mental jujitsu with things today on this podcast. In that, I was thinking UGC was UMG at the beginning of the podcast, and this happens a lot in this industry, and where companies, and this is actually not, this is not special to esports. This is kind of actually something that all industries faces, where we're all kind of doing the same thing, and we're, you know, our branding is very similar. The things we talk about are about the same, and whatnot. And I'm kind of now, you know, now we've gotten to about halfway through this podcast, and I now know what UGC is, and I kind of, you know, whether that's because I didn't, you know, whether that's because I approached this podcast from the standpoint of I want to go in as someone who's honestly curious and interested in what the guest has to say, and that can lead to like not having done enough due diligence and research prior to make sure that I know what the guest is talking about. But at the same time, I don't want to let something. I don't want to overlook something because I'm overly knowledgeable about their brand. But as we kind of move into the second half of this podcast, what I'm trying to get at is, how do you differentiate yourself from your competition when we're all kind of talking about the same thing, doing the same thing, and have sort of the same aesthetic?
You know, it's a great question. You know, for starters, there's a lot of people in this space. A lot of them have raised a lot of money in the past 2 years, and, you know, not sure what they're going to do with that kind of money. So Ultimate Gaming Championship has been around for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I mean, you know, truly grinding at that grassroots and that tournament organizer level. So The main thing that I would say really distinguishes us between our competition is the fact that we are a small team that is making esports accessible to everyone. And We really put partnerships over paychecks. And, you know, we have a few announcements coming out in August that I, you know, can't necessarily talk about right now, just because they're going to be really massive. And I think that it'll start to make a lot more sense about, you know, what our infrastructure is actually doing. But When you start to see all of these different organizations popping up, you know, the main thing that everyone is interested in is getting people into the door, running as many tournaments as you can. And, you know, if you go to these other websites, you know, Battify, Challenge, or whatever it may be, you know, you might see a lot of events, but the attendance rates on them are pretty low. You know, If you run 8 tournaments a day and you only have 6 competitors, is that really successful? You know, versus having, you know, 2 massive tournaments where you sent participation, you know, no disqualifications, no no-shows. Like, the level of experience and quality, I think, that we put into certain events outside of just, you know, throwing events on, you know, I think kind of separates us. Like, We believe every event is a major. So we don't host events just because we need to host events.
I find that to be interesting. I mean, the companies you mentioned by no means are, you know, private companies, or that aren't, you don't see those numbers publicly. What's interesting is you mentioned a bunch of companies that have raised capital, and you don't know what the money, what they're going to do with the money. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, as far as companies that really are raising money to do nothing in a way, because esports and cannabis and blockchain technology are the buzzwords right now, that venture capitalists want to just get involved with pretty much anything that's related to those three segments of those three ventures, those verticals. So I've been definitely noticing a lot of companies that behave kind of oddly in the way that they raise money, and really not really doing anything that's moving, you know, the opportunities forward for players, for coaches, for journalists, for people who want to work professionally in the industry. They just seem to be, you know, raising the money to pat themselves on the back and, you know, put a little change in their friends' pockets. And so that's something I think that is sort of a virus of sorts on the esports industry. It's something that, you know, is something that we're trying to have to figure out, like, how can we make esports more meaningful?
Right. You know, over the past, I would say 11 months as the CTO of UGC, I've been talking directly with educators, these statewide organizations, the people who are running esports at that ground level. And mm-hmm. these are the people who are honestly getting screwed over the most by this. Like, you know, we had mentioned about these educators who are barely getting paid. You know, most of these schools don't have labs. They don't have equipment. They don't have, you know, a lot of schools that mm-hmm. have high levels of interest in esports are underprivileged. You know, mm-hmm. they are in these non-opportunity zones where they don't have access, you know, to that. And mm-hmm. when a company raises money and they have more than enough and they still nickel and dime people, it's just not right. One of the main things that I've been hearing from educators is that, you know, people should not be looking at these students as price tags. It's just, mm-hmm. it's not going to be the right thing. You know,
I know what you're talking about.
If we look at traditional yep. sports, you know, we don't.
Well, I mean, that's true. And it isn't true with traditional sports. Traditional sports is just exploitative in the same way that the esports business model for summer camps and youth leagues and everything that pulls away from the regulatory bodies of an education school board and things like that. But I think you're definitely getting at a point where it seems like that you're getting at the same point that I think I've arrived at, where there needs to be some form of regulation that doesn't handicap or limit the growth of esports. And, you know, at the professional level, we often talk about unions. At the collegiate and the high school level, we talk about associations. And so I think, you know, esports is definitely not at the level where you see like a booster club for that particular thing. But if UGC was able to help facilitate the right structuring for that, because we're talking about esports infrastructure, I think that high schools primarily, not, I don't know what the approach is for collegiate, because there's so much bureaucracy when it comes to that level, that because UGC is able to give that sort of guidance, the educators at the school boards are able to execute on these esports programs more efficiently and more, and that they're more, it seems that it's providing more opportunity than it is creating an outlet for kids to just escape the other programs that they need to be also paying attention to it at the same level. So it's not just, because you mentioned earlier in this podcast that school boards look at gaming as this negative, but making it as not a supplement, but making it an addition to and parallel to the other programs that they're running in their schools.
Absolutely. You know, I believe that it's counterparts. You know, a prime example is I'm from a small town, you know, called Metropolis, Illinois. And mm-hmm. Massac County has the number one Overwatch team in Illinois. And what's interesting about that is my town is 4,000 people. And so mm-hmm. if you look at our, you know, we're far from D1 or whatever, like the big schools are, but, mm-hmm. you know, the size of your town and the size of your school doesn't necessarily impact gaming like these traditional sports will. And so mm-hmm. there's a lot more advantage and a lot more opportunity for schools, you know, to thrive. And it doesn't necessarily have to have the best equipment or, you know, anything like that. it gets scary for people when you tell, you know, a school board that they need to buy 8 high-end gaming computers where the computers that they have don't work. And, you know, of course, with budgeting and whatnot, it's a little alarming. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty right now, especially in education.
But I mean, for people like yourself that are facilitating these services and these consultations with school boards, you're pulling from data that's not necessarily, you know, experience with other school boards. It's partly that, but it's also pulling a lot of information from what worked to make esports professional. And, you know, I'm not sure if you saw the headlines recently, but the first CSGO tournament in the UK was played on 20-year-old PCs with no graphics cards or something like that. And so I can't imagine what that, because I'm sure what happened in that situation was that someone who might have been, you know, just the average IT professional, an older person that doesn't know much about gaming and wanted to cut corners on the budget, was decided to charge high ticket admission not ticket admission, but high entry fee on the tournament so that they could recoup their investment in hosting a tournament. And so they choose to cheap out on the computers, they chose to cheap out on the peripherals, cheap out on the displays. And so that sort of being, because the market of Scholastic Esports it's like the baby hasn't even been born yet. Like esports is in its infancy, but the baby hasn't even been born yet when it comes to Scholastic Esports. And so a lot of people don't even have any reference to play back on when they're talking about like, what PCs should we buy? You know, unless they have a streamer or a gamer or somebody who's leading that program.
Yeah, you know, and not to mention, even if someone is knowledgeable about it, you know, it's most of the time they don't understand enough about it to be cost effective. You know,
right.
And one of the beauties of working with companies like LG and SHI is that, you know, we help people build esport labs. You know, we have a trusted team that can go into your organization, provide you with LED walls, top end monitors, you know, at really affordable rates because you're buying in bulk. And a lot of people, you know, they think that they just have to go to Best Buy and, you know, get this stuff. And it's just not the case anymore. You know, and especially with crypto being so big, trying to buy GPUs nowadays, it's alarming. It's gotten better, but it's still rough. And so, you know, the equipment is definitely one boundary. And with our tournaments, like we host a lot of Fortnite and Rocket League. So being able, you know, to play those on console, you know, a $200, $300 Xbox is so much more cheaper than, you know, a $1,500 gaming computer that can only serve one person. So, you know, having that kind of flexibility, you know, it matters.
Absolutely. And so at this time, UGC has basically two avenues, or maybe there's more to that. You have UGC proper, UGC EDU, and do you have another segment other than those two?
Yeah. So UGC EDU has been our Scholastic spinoff. That is, we've been focusing solely on implementing our technology to help our Scholastic partners. And, you know, we have a few press releases coming out that'll show you, you know, the full scale of what we've been working on. It's kind of been in stealth, you know, the past couple of months, but very happy, very, very happy with how things are turned out. You know, UGC itself, we also have UGC Esports, which is our tournament platform. You know, everything is run on that. But UGC is, you know, the main brand. Of course, we have, you know, our store for merchandise. So you can buy jerseys, custom, you know, team apparel, mouse pads, bags, all of that. We also have, you know, our broadcasting team. And so our broadcast, you know, helps with League of Legends. We do RLCS, the Rocket League Championship Series, their B-Stream. You know, really high-end stuff. You know, we consult a lot of other tournament organizers, you know, and kind of white label type stuff. which is interesting. You know, you hear a lot about these big names, and behind the scenes, you know, it's probably us. So we have finally started to break into that phase where I think UGC itself is going to start getting that recognition, not only as a white label, but as, you know, powered by UGC.
Right. Right. That's what I was going to ask you about. So going into the future, are you guys anticipating working again with the 343 with Halo? Halo, why am I fucking up? What is Infinite. Halo 5? Yeah. Halo Infinite? Halo 6?
Halo 27, whatever they choose to be. You know, we're open to it. We've definitely done a lot of stuff with 343. You know, I'm sure that we will probably do some grassroots stuff for them at some point. You know, right now, we provide over 30 different titles on our platform. So we have this big net, you know, working with game developers specifically. You know, Psyonix is a big one. And just making sure that, you know, we're doing justice to what they want their esport programs to look like. That's the main thing, you know, because if you're an organizer like that, you want to have top tier performance, top tier quality, and of course the top tier experience for their players. So, all of those are so important, of course.
Yeah. And, you know, getting to know UGC a little bit more and, you know, kind of talking with you about where it's going, I now kind of know more about and can familiarize myself with like other companies that are doing things that are similar. And that you guys are a full service esports company that not only hosts tournaments on your platform, but also is entering into the education spaces, consultants. You've got your professional esports side where you're hosting tournaments for the biggest developers, and that your broadcasting component as well comes into play. I'm sure that has a component of marketing, advertising, and brokering deals for sponsorships. And you know, a little bit about what you talked about coming out soon, a blog post to kind of paint that picture and that company roadmap in a way that that folks can look at and think, well, you know, let's work with UGC. Let's find a way to accomplish the goals that we've set out in the next quarter or next year. And so I really do appreciate you coming on the show. And I want to, before we sign off here, give you the opportunity to let the audience and the listeners know where they can get connected with UGC and also with you, Jeremy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first off, Trent, thank you so much for this opportunity. You know, I've been following along. I am part of the Facebook group, so I see all of the posts too.
Oh, very cool.
You know, I will say, if you're listening to this and you're interested in, you know, starting an esports league, or you're looking to, you know, step up your esports operations, you know, visit us at ugc.gg. For Battle Academy, you can go to battleacademy.gg. And then as well as ugcesports.gg. My email address is jeremy@ugc.gg. Lots of GGs in all of this. You know, most importantly, if you're a Scholastic entity or an organization and you're looking for an alternative to what you have currently, you know, whether you're stuck in a contract or you're looking for a better experience for your students, we have the toolbox that has been battle tested by tons of statewide organizations. And we have educator approved, like we have an EDU board guaranteed to make sure that we are putting students first. So if you're interested in that, please give me an email.
Very cool. Thank you very much, Jeremy Packer of UGC Ultimate Gaming Championships, for coming on the show. This has been the Esports Business Network podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.